And that means it's time for a Gaza Corner, and it's nearing the 12th anniversary, 12 years almost, that Gaza Corner has aired within Tangents here on KALW. The primary reason, I mean, there are many reasons to have a segment like Gaza Corner, but the primary reason, I think, is because the mainstream media consistently fails to cover certain stories having to do with Palestine and Israel. It's almost like I wouldn't say there's a formal censorship at all, but I would say there's self-censorship. And there's also a lot of lack of context and misleading language in the reporting of the mainstream media. And by the mainstream media, what I mean is the New York Times, National Public Radio, Washington Post, although the Post is actually doing a better job these days, the BBC, which obviously based in London but airs on many public radio stations in the United States, including KALW. And the mainstream media is covering Palestinian issues and Palestinian voices much better than it was 5 years ago. But the coverage is still woefully inadequate, in my view. And I'll point you to an open letter. If you go to the Tangents website, which is tangents.com, left-hand column is a playlist. It's called the Tangents Playlist. Thank you, Harry, for posting the Gaza Corner section. And there is an open letter linked in the section, and it's titled, Why Reporting on Palestine Has to Change. It's from June of last year. And among the 514 signatories, the mainstream media was ironically very well represented. Several from the LA Times, the Boston Globe, the Washington Post, the Chicago Tribune, all journalists who signed their name and were affiliated with those aforementioned media outlets. But many also remained anonymous, I assume, out of fear of losing their jobs. Four from the New York Times, others from ABC, CNN, PBS, AP, even two from the Wall Street Journal, among others. I'd like to quote from the beginning of this open letter, "Finding truth and holding the powerful to account are core principles of journalism. Yet, for decades, our news industry has abandoned those values and coverage of Israel and Palestine. We have failed our audiences with a narrative that obscures the most fundamental aspects of the story, Israel's military occupation and its system of apartheid. For the sake of our readers and viewers and the truth, we have a duty to change course immediately and end this decades-long journalistic malpractice. The evidence of Israel's systemic oppression of Palestinians is overwhelming and must no longer be sanitized," unquote. Earlier this year in February, Amnesty International, which is the largest and the most mainstream human rights organization in the world, issued a 280-page report that accused Israel of the crime of apartheid, saying, quote, "It is a crime against humanity, and it has to end," unquote. Last year, Human Rights Watch and the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem came out with detailed reports also characterizing Israel as an apartheid state. Resuming from the open letter to fellow journalists, quote, "Apartheid, persecution, ethnic supremacy are increasingly gaining institutional recognition after years of Palestinian advocacy, and we as journalists need to examine whether our coverage reflects that reality. Take, for example, the language used in the coverage of East Jerusalem neighborhood Sheikh Jarrah. media outlets often refer to forced displacement of Palestinians living there, illegal under international law and potentially a war crime, as quote-unquote evictions. During the last few days of Ramadan last year, Israeli forces violently attacked worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound with tear gas, rubber-tipped bullets. Journalists didn't call this an attack or an assault on Palestinians, but rather a quote-unquote clash, as if both sides shared equal culpability and agency in the escalation. The asymmetry in context does not just extend to the language we use. Stories tend to disproportionately amplify Israeli narratives while suppressing Palestinian ones. We have an obligation, a sacred one, to get the story right. Every time we fail to report the truth, we fail our audiences, our purpose, and ultimately the Palestinian people. Unquote. That's an excerpt from the June 2021 open letter to fellow journalists titled Why Reporting on Palestine Has to Change. It's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist, so you can read the whole letter if you wish. The letter refers to raids by Israeli security during Ramadan last year at Al-Aqsa, which is the third holiest site in all of Islam. And this year, very recently, during Ramadan, the raids happened all over again. There's an opinion piece linked titled How Media Coverage Whitewashes Israeli State Violence Against Palestinians. It's an opinion piece co-written by Laura Albast and Kat Narr from the Washington Post on April 28th, quoting the intro, at the break of dawn on April 15th, Israeli police attacked Palestinian worshippers at the holy site of Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. They used stun grenades, tear gas, and rubber-coated steel bullets, wounding more than 150. Since then, Israeli forces have launched new incursions. When looking at the footage of what happened, the dynamic is obvious. Forces with gear and guns versus worshippers kneeling in prayer. However, Western media coverage routinely labels this situation as quote-unquote complicated, portraying this state violence as quote-unquote clashes and quote-unquote tensions between two sides. Headlines in outlets such as the Associated Press, the New York Times, the Guardian, the Wall Street Journal, NBC News, and others use language that fails to recognize the power imbalance between the Israeli military apparatus and the native Palestinian people. This is a pattern we have seen over and over again in media coverage of Palestine. When Israeli forces raid our neighborhoods in the middle of the night, bomb our children, demolish our homes, colonize our land, and kill our people, we are somehow equal instigators. Media descriptions regularly imply a false symmetry between occupier and occupied, propping up anti-Palestinian and Islamophobic narratives that blame the Palestinian people for Israeli aggression. This contrasts with coverage of the war in Ukraine, in which the Western media makes it very clear that Russia is the aggressor and the Ukrainian people are resisting as any person would if their home were to be invaded, unquote. The Israeli-Palestinian news portal Mondo Weiss published a story earlier today. It's linked. It's titled, New York Times Editors Cover Up a Major Cause of the Rising Tensions in Jerusalem's Old City, Preventing Readers from Fully Understanding Why It Has Become a Dangerous Flashpoint. Quoting from the article, over the past few weeks, the Times, along with others in the mainstream U.S. media, have reported on quote-unquote clashes in and around the 1,300-year-old Al-Aqsa Mosque sometimes implying that the violence was triggered by Palestinians who threw stones from inside the mosque, or also suggesting that the tensions are caused by, quote-unquote, age-old religious differences. The accounts characteristically imply that it was the Palestinians who started the latest conflict. Here's the second paragraph of the New York Times report by Patrick Kingsley. Quote, the skirmish followed a deadly wave of Arab attacks in Israel and an ensuing Israeli military crackdown in the West Bank, unquote. In football parlance, and I mean maybe in soccer as well, but I mean American football, I would call that a misdirection. If you Google a reliable Middle East news source, pick, I'll give you one, Middle East Eye, E-Y-E, Middle East Eye. I think it's a pretty good Middle East news portal. If you Google Middle East Eye, Palestinians killed recently in West Bank, the screen fills with articles about Palestinians shot to death. The New York Times may not find it newsworthy that unarmed Palestinians are routinely killed in Israel, but to suggest the Al-Aqsa violence is directly related to a, quote, deadly wave of Arab attacks in Israel and an ensuing Israeli military crackdown in the West Bank, unquote, is misleading. The same New York Times writer, Patrick Kingsley, last August wrote a story that did get at the truth. The headline was, in shift, Israel quietly allows Jewish prayer on Temple Mount, subtitled, the change upsets a long-standing compromise aimed at staving off conflict, unquote. Now, I'm not sure if a typical New York Times reader, you know, reads the headline and maybe the opening paragraph and thinks they get the gist of the article. Because if they did that, the article blames the Palestinians. But if they read the whole article, in this case, the key information in the most recent Patrick Kingsley article in the New York Times, which is linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist, it's buried in paragraph 18. Quote, for months, the Israeli police protected Jewish worshipers at the site, breaking a decades-old understanding aimed at preventing conflict that allowed Jews to visit but not worship there. That change has created the impression among Palestinians that Israel is trying to unilaterally change the delicate status quo and further undermine Muslim access to and oversight of one of the most sacred places in Islam, unquote. Mondo Weiss writer James North speculates, quote, Kingsley knows better. He most likely put these key paragraphs much higher in his report until the editors got hold of it, unquote. Only at the very end of Patrick Kingsley's New York Times article is it mentioned why the Israeli government changed its policy last year, the very, very end of the article. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, quoting Kingsley, leads an immensely fragile coalition government. Several of Mr. Bennett's lawmakers are from the religious right. Any further compromises might prompt them to defect, unquote. In other words, complying with the historic compromise could cause Bennett's government to collapse. The Washington Post covered the same story, also buried news of Israel's policy change, showed up in paragraph 11. Police officials said they are working closely with the Jordanian Waqf, the trust that manages Al-Aqsa, to keep it open for Ramadan prayers. But Jordan's foreign ministry accused Israel of violating long-standing agreements by allowing Jewish worshipers onto the surrounding plaza under armed escort. From this Washington Post article, quoting the Jordanian ministry, Israel's measures to change the status quo on the Mount are a dangerous escalation. Israel bears full responsibility for the consequences of the current escalation that is thwarting efforts invested to bring about calm, unquote. Jordan says Israel is restricting access by Muslim worshipers and not restraining Israeli far-right nationalists whose rituals violate the former status quo and, from an Islamic point of view, desecrate the holy site. NPR's Weekend Edition also had a report covering this. It was a very short, I would say, it's about a three-minute report. And it omitted the Jordanian perspective. It's called Clashes Between Israeli Police and Palestinians Continue at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And you'll hear the voice first of Scott Simon and then Peter Kenyon.
And are people in Jerusalem on all sides worried about where this might be headed?
They are. Palestinian attacks killed at least 14 people in Israel in recent weeks, after all, and Israeli military raids then led to a number of arrests in the West Bank. And Al-Aqsa has been under Israeli control for a long time, since 1967. Today, Palestinians are worried that Israel might be convinced to change the rules, making it less accessible for them.
Once again, it's misleading. This is coverage where Peter Kenyon only includes news of Israeli deaths, and instead of acknowledging the Palestinians shot to death in the military raids in the West Bank, he only says that there were arrests. There's also no context included with Kenyon's statement, quote, Al-Aqsa has been under Israeli control since 1967, unquote. No mention of the important status quo agreement with the Jordanian Waqf, and that Israel violated the agreement and changed its policy last summer. Context is very, very important. In another development not reported, as far as I know, by the mainstream media, Israeli police only allowed Muslim worshippers to enter Al-Aqsa if they agreed to hand over their IDs to the police. I mean, this is in violation of Israeli law and the right to freedom of worship. This occurrence happened on April 21st. It was limited to men 17 to 45. And according to testimony collected by Haaretz, this procedure has been used off and on since at least 2015. According to the Association of Civil Rights in Israel, the procedure undermines the rights of worshipers. The police have no legal authority to demand that anyone deposit proof of identity as a condition for entering a place of worship. Many Israeli Jews believe that Al-Aqsa was built in the same area as two ancient Jewish temples, hence the name Temple Mount. So why shouldn't Israelis have equal access to the sacred complex and be able to pray at the Temple Mount? There are extremist Israeli Jews who threaten to destroy Al-Aqsa and rebuild a new Jewish temple there, but they are in the minority. And I believe all Jews and Palestinians should have equal access to prayer at the Al-Aqsa Temple Mount complex. Equal access for all. But equal access has never existed for Palestinians living under occupation. Palestinians in the occupied territories do not have freedom of movement. Gazans, the people of Gaza, live in what many refer to as an open-air prison. They can't leave Gaza. And many in the West Bank are prevented from entering Jerusalem, where Al-Aqsa is located. Hanin Majadli, who is a Palestinian-Israeli citizen, provided valuable context, I think, in a Haaretz opinion piece called What Jewish Israelis Don't Get About Al-Aqsa. This is also linked at the Gaza Corner section of the Tangents playlist. Quote, there is no other place in Israel that is as clearly Palestinian as East Jerusalem. Al-Aqsa has in recent years become a Palestinian national symbol, and the connection to it is no longer only religious. It serves as a symbol of Palestinian national victory over Jewish ultra-nationalism. This victory is achieved thanks to the fact that the area of Al-Aqsa is the only place that Israel refrains from controlling fully, and that situation is enshrined in law. Even for an occupying and oppressive regime like the Israeli one, the complexity there is too great. The Muslim world, remember Al-Aqsa is the third holiest site in all of Islam, the Muslim world looks on and threatens to intervene. The determination of the East Jerusalemites and their battle against the clubs and gas grenades of the police forces have become a symbol of effective resistance as well as conveying a clear message, quote, we won't allow you to control Al-Aqsa because it is the last piece remaining under Palestinian control and no Palestinian will give it up, unquote.